Lesson 33. Text A. We are not deaf. Jane and Lisa have had lunch with Uncle David and Aunt Janet. The two old people are deaf, and the girls are tired because they have had to shout. They both want to leave. We'll have to leave soon, Aunt Janet.
Yes, of course you can have some tea, dear. I'll go and make some.
Oh, no, Lisa, stop her. You'd better say it louder. We'll have to leave, Aunt Janet.
You can't leave yet. I want to hear some more about Canada.
But I must go back and look after Malcolm. Oh, dear, they didn't hear. I must go back and look after Malcolm.
Why? What's the matter with him?
I told you, Aunt Janet, he isn't well.
But I thought you said he was in the hotel.
Where are you staying?
We're camping.
We're camping!
In this weather?
Well, I'm not surprised Malcolm isn't well. Perhaps I ought to come out and see him.
No, that's not a good idea, Auntie. He's ill.
What's the matter with him?
He's got a cold. He's got a temperature. Oh, what's the use? He's got a cold!
All right, all right. We can hear. We're not deaf.
Text B. The Stolen Smells. Many years ago, in another country, there lived a poor student. He had very little money. He lived in a very small room over a restaurant. His room was at the back of the building, over the kitchen. The restaurant owner was a very mean man. Nobody liked him. But he was a good cook, and many people came to his restaurant. One day, he was working quietly in his kitchen, when he heard the poor student talking to his friend. "You must be very unhappy," said his friend, "living in a poor room like this." "Oh, no," said the student. "I am busy with my studies, and I'm not interested in my room." "But you only eat plain rice. You don't have money for anything tasty." "Yes, it's true. I eat only plain rice, but the delicious smells that come from the kitchen make the rice very tasty indeed." The restaurant owner was furious. This student was stealing the smells from his kitchen. He decided to take him to court. Everybody in the court laughed when the mean man accused the student of stealing his smells. But the judge took him seriously. "Every man should be able to complain to the court," he said. When the restaurant owner told the judge everything, the judge said, "You are right, the student is guilty." The restaurant owner was delighted. But the poor student was very much afraid. What could he do? He had only a few coins in his pocket. The judge asked the student if he had any money. The student took 5 coins from his pocket and held them out to the judge in his right hand. "Let the coins fall into your left hand," said the judge. The courtroom was very quiet. Everyone heard the tinkle of the coins as they fell into the student's left hand. "Well," said the judge to the restaurant owner, "you've heard his money. You've been well paid for your smells." Seven. Read the following passage once. Underline the key words while reading and retell the story to your partner. A bad student. Peter's father wants to know how his son is getting along in school. One day he asks him, "Peter, how are you getting along in school? What seat do you have in the class? Does the teacher place you in seats according to your marks?"
"Yes, father."
"And what seat do you have?"
"Number 21.
"And how many students are there in your class?"
21, Father. Several weeks pass. Peter, who is a bad student and studies very little, brings home the marks of his monthly examinations. How are you getting along in school now, Peter? Asks his father. Your marks do not seem to be very good. I am getting along much better now, Father. What is your place in the class now? Number 20 now. Good. Then you are one place ahead. No, Father. One of the students left the class. His family moved to another town.
Lesson 34. Text A. Stage Fright. Tom was sick with disappointment. The piano recital had turned out well, all except for his solo. He couldn't understand how it could have happened. He had practiced for weeks that seemed like months. He had given up sports until after the recital, because he wanted to make his parents proud of him. He spent all his time with the piano. His teacher had said he was gifted. It was true that he accepted music as another language, another way to talk to people. His grandparents, aunt, and uncle all came to hear him play, and he was anxious to show them that he was the best in the whole class. But when he stood up to go to the piano, his knees felt weak. He looked into the audience and saw his family smiling back at him. His mouth went dry. His fingers began to tremble. The trembling became uncontrollable shaking, as though he had caught a bad cold. He sat down at the piano. He took a deep breath. He played the first 5 bars of his music, then realized with horror that he had forgotten the rest. He started over, thinking that would help. It didn't. He stood up as if in slow motion and walked off the stage. He was a failure. The demon stage fright had left a brilliant musical career in ruins.
Text B. I shall never fly again. Tom Jackson and Charles Brown are talking about their summer holidays. Where are you going for your holidays, Charles?
To Australia. I'm going to visit my uncle in Brisbane for 3 weeks.
Good gracious!
You certainly are lucky. How are you going there?
By air, of course. It takes over 2 weeks to go by sea.
I once went to Singapore by air. It was very exciting, but never again.
Why? Did you feel frightened?
For a short time. One of the engines caught fire.
What did the pilot do?
He put it out and flew back to the airport. Then he asked the people at the airport where the emergency runway was.
Did you land safely?
Yes, we did, but I shall never fly again.
7. Read the following passage once. Underline the key words while reading, and retell the story to your partner. It was a dark day when we got our report cards. The sky was full of grey clouds, and it was sprinkling rain. I was over at Clyde's house, and Gloria and Kitty were there. Sam probably would have been there too, only he had got a 2-week job in the afternoons, helping out at Freddy's. Actually, he only did it so that his mother would let him be on the track team again. Sam and his mother had this little system going. He would do something good doing, and she'd let him do something that he wanted to. Clyde's report card was on the kitchen table, and we all sat around it like it was some kind of a big important document. I had got a pretty good report card, and had wanted to show it off, but I knew it wasn't the time. Clyde pushed the card toward me, and I read it. He had all satisfactory remarks on the side labelled Personal Traits and Behaviour. He had also received B's in Music and Art Appreciation. But everything else was either a C or a D, except mathematics. His mathematics mark was a big red F that had been circled. I don't know why they had to circle the F, when it was the only red mark on the card. In the teacher's comments section, someone had written that Clyde had little ability to handle an academic program. A little ability is better than none, I said. No one said anything, so I figured it probably wasn't the right time to try to cheer Clyde up. I knew all about his switching from a commercial program to an academic program, but I really hadn't thought he'd have any trouble. I saw the grade advisor today. He said I should switch back to the commercial program. Clyde looked like he'd start crying any minute. His eyes were red, and his voice was shaky. He said that I had to take mathematics over, and if I failed again, or failed another required subject, I couldn't graduate. The way it is now, I'm going to have to finish up in the summer, because I switched over. I think you can pass it if you really want to, Kitty said. Clyde's sister was so pretty, I couldn't even look at her. If I did, I started feeling funny and couldn't talk right. Sometimes, I daydreamed about marrying her. Just then, Clyde's mother came in, and he gave a quick look at Kitty. "Hi, young ladies and young gentlemen." Mrs. Jones was a kind of heavy woman, but she was pretty, too. You could tell she was Kitty's mother if you looked close. She put her package down and started taking things out. "I heard you people talking when I first came in. By the way you hushed up, I guess you don't want me to hear what you were talking about. I'll be out of your way in a minute, soon as I put the frozen foods in the refrigerator." "I got my report card today," Clyde said. His mother stopped taking the food out and turned toward us. Clyde pushed the report card about 2 inches toward her. She really didn't even have to look at the card to know that it was bad. She could have told that just by looking at Clyde. But she picked it up and looked at it a long time. First she looked at one side, and then the other, and then back at the first side again. "What did they say around the school?" she asked, still looking at the card. "They said I should drop the academic course and go back to the other one." I could hardly hear Clyde, he spoke so low. "Well, what are you going to do, young man?" She looked up at Clyde, and Clyde looked up at her, and there were tears in his eyes, and I almost started crying. I can't stand to see my friends cry. "What are you going to do, Mr. Jones?" I'm going to keep the academic course," Clyde said. "You think it's going to be any easier this time?" Mrs. Jones asked. "No. Things ain't always easy. Lord knows that things ain't always easy." For a minute, there was a faraway look in her eyes, but then her face turned into a big smile. "You're just like your father, boy. That man never would give up on anything he really wanted. Did I ever tell you the time he was trying to learn to play the trombone?" "No." Clyde still had tears in his eyes, but he was smiling too. Suddenly everybody was happy. It was like seeing a rainbow when it was still raining. Lesson 35. Text A. A Proud Linguist. Once upon a time, there was an Austrian emperor who made it a rule to interview every one of his soldiers once a year. During the interviews, he invariably asked three questions. How old are you? How long have you been in my army? And are you satisfied with your pay and the food you get? In that order. One year, the day before the imperial interviews, a Frenchman got himself enlisted in the Austrian army. Since he knew no German, he was on tenterhooks. Now there was an old soldier in his unit who knew a little French and was anxious to help. In fact, he knew just about enough French to be able to teach his young friend the shortest possible answers, in the proper order, to the imperial questions. The day arrived with all the sound and colour that befitted it. The emperor, in all his splendour, was seated on the throne, his entourage attending respectfully in the background. The soldiers filed past him, each taking barely half a minute, during which time the questions were asked and the answers reverently provided. When the Frenchman's turn came, far from being nervous, he was sure of himself. Having recited the answers in the proper order, he did not know how many times. The emperor looked at him long and hard, and suddenly took it into his head that he had seen the young man somewhere before. He began, a little out of the usual order, with the second question. How long have you been in my army? 21 years, replied the Frenchman, not without some pride in his ability to learn a foreign language so quickly and so well. The monarch was surprised, for the young man did not look very much older than that, but he went on to ask, Then how old are you? 1 day, came the answer. That was too much for the emperor, who sat back and muttered, Well, well, that beats me. It seems either you're mad or I am. Positive that that was the last of the imperial questions, the proud linguist stepped forward and with a smile said, Both, Your Majesty.
Text B. What am I going to do? Mr. Davidson is standing outside his house. He has forgotten to bring his key with him. Henry Black and John Field walk past and they say hello to Mr. Davidson. Hello, boys. Can you help me? I've forgotten my key and I can't get in. Well, try our best, Mr. Davidson. You're both taller than me, aren't you? Yes, I'm over 5'10". I'm the tallest of the three of us. But I'm almost as tall as John. Can you climb on John's shoulders and reach that window? All right. What shall I do now? Open the window, please, and climb through it into the house. Oh dear, I can't move it. It's fastened inside. Can you break the window? Look, there's a policeman. He's coming towards us.
7. Read the following passage once. Underline the key words while reading and retell the story to your partner. Adventure at Midnight. Long ago, there lived two brothers who were very poor. They lived in tiny huts at opposite sides of their large wheat field. At the end of each summer, when harvest time came, the brothers divided the grain they had grown into two equal parts. Some of it they took to be milled into flour, from which they baked bread. The rest was sold for money, with which they bought shoes, clothing, and tools. Although they toiled from sun up to sun down 6 days a week, they hardly had enough to eat. In spite of this, they were happy because of their great love for one another. But one year, Simon, the younger brother, felt a great sadness. His wife said, "Tell me what is making you so blue. You no longer sing while you work, and the twinkle is gone from your eye." "You are right, dear wife. I am worried about my older brother, Reuben. He is alone in the world, with neither wife nor children. Who will care for him when he gets old and can no longer work? If only he had some money to save for his old age. It isn't fair that we share the harvest equally, but he is proud and will not accept gifts from me. What shall I do?" "Would you take food from your own children?" she asked in astonishment. "There is nothing you can do," she said, "so forget it." Simon knew that his wife was right, but he was determined to help Reuben, come what might. Meanwhile, Reuben was sitting under a tree, thinking deeply. When he noticed a bird on the way to its winter home, he said, "That bird and I are fortunate because we are free. Neither of us has a wife and children always needing to be fed. But my poor brother, Simon, is burdened with a family. It isn't fair that we share the harvest equally. Surely he deserves more than I. But he is very proud and will not accept gifts from me. What can I do? In several days, we'll take our harvest to town. If I don't think of a plan soon, it will be too late." That night, when the moon was high in the sky, Reuben went quietly to his barn, where he filled a sack with wheat and put it on his shoulder. Then he crossed the empty field to his brother's hut and secretly placed his wheat with Simon's. "Ah," he said when he had finished, "this is better. Now my dear younger brother will have more than I." Reuben went happily back to his hut and slept soundly for the first time in weeks. An hour later, Simon woke up with a start. He had dreamed of a marvelous plan. He crept out of bed, got dressed, and went to his barn. Filling a sack with wheat, walking across the field to Reuben's hut, and placing it there took very little time. Before long, he was back in bed, pulling up the covers. "Now I can sleep peacefully," he thought, "because Reuben will have a little extra to save for his old age." The next morning, Reuben and Simon were amazed. How could this be? Their piles were equal, yet each knew he had secretly given wheat to his brother. Something must have gone wrong. So that night, Reuben waited until midnight, when he again took Simon some of his grain. "There, now I am fully awake, and I'm sure I put it on his pile. Tomorrow mine will be smaller and his larger, as it should be." A short time later, Simon did the same. He, too, was sure that all would be well this time. But when day dawned, each brother saw that his share was exactly half the harvest. Reuben and Simon were desperate. Tomorrow they were to go to town to sell their grain. Tonight was their last chance. Midnight came again, but this time Reuben and Simon chose the same moment to carry out their mission of brotherly love. Each placed a sack of wheat on his shoulders and began to walk across the field. Halfway across, they met. "Reuben, what are you doing out so late at night?" cried Simon in dismay. He tried to hide his sack. Startled, Reuben dropped his bundle. Then he saw Simon's sack, and they both began to laugh. When they finished laughing, they hugged each other tightly. Their hearts were full of love for each other, and they were content.
听力课堂，欢迎你！
听力课堂，欢迎！
听啊，讲啊！